So tonight we continue our study, this portion of our service, the teaching portion of our service, in one of our confessions and what we believe together in the Heidelberg Catechism. And I ask you to turn for a bit here in the back to your Psalter hymnal, page 10. Page 10. And we have three questions and answers that we'll go through tonight. We'll do them one at a time and pause after each one. And so I'll ask the question and then ask you to respond with the answer that's there provided. So we've come so far and we've considered our only comfort and how we come to know our sin and our misery and what God's law is and the reality that we cannot live up to that perfectly. And so we come to this next question, question and answer 6. Did God create man so wicked and perverse? No. God created man good and in his own image, that is, in true righteousness and holiness, so that he might truly know God his creator, love him with all his heart, and live with him in eternal happiness for his praise and glory. What an important question, because this is the great question that people struggle with, the issue of sin and where sin came from. And unbelievers and those atheists and skeptics and those who want to attack Christianity, the first thing they do is try to blame God for the problems that have resulted in this world and the sin that has resulted in this world. And you'll notice here that Christians have never, ever tried and asserted such a thing, that God is the author of sin. That's blasphemy. God is not the author of sin. Where does it say here that sin came from? Well, what did God do? When he talks about creation, how did he create us at the beginning? The first thing that you'll notice that it says, and this is taken right out of Genesis, is that God created us good. Remember, after he had created all things, that he looked at it all, which included man, he said, indeed, this is good. And the amazing thing about creating human beings is that he created us in his own image. Now that's an amazing thing to state. No other creature of this world is made in the image of God. And here you'll notice that image is defined for us. What is the image of God? It says that we were created in true righteousness and holiness. That we were about worshiping God and being holy in conduct in the original creation, and that there was righteousness, there was the honoring of God's will, we were created in that kind of way. And notice the three purposes that are outlined here for which we were created: to know God, so that he might truly know God, his creator. Now, we've been studying Samuel. What's the problem after the fall? No one's known God. So that means that Adam, in the original garden scene, there was your first holy of holies. Talk about this morning and the holy place and where God is. There was your first holy place. God was in the midst of her. His throne was right there. Adam could come and he could commune. And what was going on in the garden? We talk about what's going to happen in eternity. What was going on in the garden? Adam was always learning about God. Boys and girls, that never ends in heaven. We can never exhaust knowing God. There will always be more to learn for an eternity. That's how great, that's how magnificent, that's how all-wise and splendid he is. Second reason, to love him. Adam was created to love the Lord with all of his heart. What an amazing thing. You know, the Westminster Confession asked that question: what is the chief purpose or end of man? It is to glorify God and enjoy him. Love him. Enjoy him. Know him. And live with him in eternal happiness. For what reason? We were created not for ourselves, but for his praise and glory. We had that ultimate purpose in the garden, to praise him. Notice this morning, again, day and night, what are they doing? They're praising him. They're singing to him. They're exalting him. That's what Adam was doing in the garden. And sure, Adam was given assignments and tasks. Why? To live for his glory. He was building, wasn't he? They were building a kingdom. So what an amazing thing. God created all of the creation good. There was no fault with it. No blame could ever be leveled at God for what's happened. So then we come to the next question. Then where does man's corrupt nature come from? Let's answer. From the fall and disobedience of our first parents, Adam and Eve in paradise. The fall has so poisoned our nature that we are born sinners, corrupt from conception on. This is a very important question and answer because it lays out in front of us how it all happened. We're in this mess. We have fallen into this mess because we have a head. Adam was our federal head, and at the instigation of the devil, and we'll get to there soon, in paradise, this fall, falling away from that true righteousness and holiness, our whole natures are poisoned so that from conception, we're born in sin. From conception. Now, that's not a very well-received teaching today, but I want you to think about what happened in the garden. You know, comparing the confessions are really interesting. The Westminster Confession says that life was promised to Adam upon the condition of perfect and complete obedience. That first arrangement, the old theologians called a covenant of works in the garden. And why was it? That there was in the garden the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The tree of life held out for Adam. But what happened? He partook and broke the law of God. He ate of the tree, ate of the fruit, plunging us all into sin. And remember what happened when the Lord came down? I've rehearsed this with you before, but the text says that some of the translations say that he was walking in the cool of the day. What does that mean? You know, cool of the day means the spirit of the day. It was judgment day. And God demanded a reckoning. Did Adam complete the test? That time period where had he remained obedient, he would have been lifted up to a higher plane. And we would have enjoyed the bliss of eternal happiness, as the question and answer 6. But he didn't. And the curses fell. And what was the curse? What were the curses of that covenant? It was death. Not only physically, but eternally. And you see that play out in history, that we're all of this world is in. This is one of the most evident things that should be evident to everyone of the reality of what the Bible teaches us. Look at the mess of this world and look at the world try to explain it all away. You know, look at sin. Look at how it's corrupted everything. And the Bible explains where all this came from. And it says that even from conception, you know, Psalm 51, David said, I was born in sin. Psalm 58 speaks of the wicked going astray from the womb speaking lies. So we're born in this sin. We have this problem and we go through life doing what? Did you catch what James said this morning? One of you came up to me after the service and says, you know, that is so amazing that James says that we are constantly deceiving ourselves. Life after the fall is one of constantly deceiving ourselves about the true problem of man in his spiritual darkness and sin. And so this is how it all happened. We had it passed down to us from our first parents. We've all inherited it from Adam. And then we compile sin upon us daily in breaking God's law more and more and more. As Romans 2 says, people are heaping up for themselves judgment for the day of judgment. That's an awful predicament, isn't it? So then, you know, you come to the question, how bad is it really? Question 8. But are we so corrupt that we're totally unable to do any good and inclined toward all evil? Yes, unless we are born again by the Spirit of God. Are we as bad as we possibly could be? Is there any remnant left of the image of God in us? Well, there's a remnant, and God does restrain sin in this world. There's no doubt about that. Scriptures show that all over the place. But there is no good when it comes to salvation. There's nothing that we can do that is good enough to please this perfect and holy and pure and splendid God. And all of us are born into this mess. So then what has to happen? You got to be born again. The theology of the new birth is so important, isn't it? The Lord has to take that black heart and he has to plant the principle of life there spiritually, and that heart begins to beat again. And it can do what? It can hear this. That's the evidence of the new birth. Receiving the implanted word, which is able, says James, to do what? Save your souls. The new birth injects life into the heart so that you can believe. You who were dead in trespasses and sins, what does he do? He makes you alive. That's the gospel. Let's sing tonight to the Lord. The song that we're going to sing is number 81. We'll remain seated and sing the stanzas of number 81.